Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. Today's guest is performer, composer, and improviser Cindy Lan, whom I first met at her sound healing event called Breath and Bow Meditations, which you can hear a little bit of right now. Starting this year, Cindy will be the executive director of the Greenwich Village Orchestra, and she has been commissioned by the Flagstaff Arts Council to compose a concerto for string and percussion, and will be performing the piece this December. In this conversation, Cindy provides a glimpse of the inner workings of a musician and creative, from the breakdowns to the breakthroughs, and all the while juggling her health and well-being alongside her musicianship. Thank you, Cindy, for sitting down with me and having a chat. It's been a minute since we've caught up with each other because it's funny. I remember now, I was thinking about how we met. And technically, the first time we met was at your concert slash sound healing experience called Breath and Bow Meditations. So how has life been since that wonderful experience, and how are you overall?
Well, I have to say that that was an experience that was very new to me, and it still feels fresh. So even though in terms of timeline, I feel like it's been a while, it's been about 4 months, I guess, since I wrapped up performances on that, it feels like it's just kind of continued, It's finding a way to cycle back into my life. So I had a bit of a break after all the commotion of that month, and then finally got to go on a trip with my husband to celebrate our wedding last year. Got to see parts of the country and the world that I'd never seen before, and feel really grateful for it. And then also have continued to deal with some health things that have come up at the same time, and have felt really grateful that my response to the surprise of having a seizure has really mellowed out. I had another follow-up appointment recently, and I was really shocked by how much more settled I felt by Raph's descriptions of the episode and my just feeling of relative like ease being in that scenario versus the first time we went and had to see doctors for it and it being really terrifying and uncertain. And there is still so much of a level of uncertainty to that whole situation, having started to kind of develop epilepsy in now my late 20s, out of nowhere, no family, prior family history of it. But I think it's been a real crash course in just how to go with unexpected things that come up. And I think that after the last few years that it's been, I feel like there's just no other way of going through like day to day, really. Yeah, I think that one thing that I'm excited to talk to you about today is just the feeling of linearity that I think the pandemic shifted in so much of us, feeling like we were all on path in a way, or, you know, convinced of a path forward or something. And I think that just got debunked for so many people in so many ways once we kind of realized, like, no, we're all much more it's all much more delicate than that, so, and complicated, and so that's basically where I am now, and have some great and exciting news that's kind of coming up in the next year. So
well, thank you for starting with such a vulnerable share. You've talked about in your performance and your relationship with music how it's a healing experience for you, or you found healing while navigating such a difficult experience personally for you, but also just navigating the pandemic for the past few years, like everyone. Would it be all right if I asked you about what life was like before your epilepsy?
Oh, sure. I mean, I guess it was just life. I didn't really...
Well, I know you started playing the viola at age 7. Is that correct? And that you took lessons from your mom. And when I read that, I was like, oh, that's fascinating, because I don't know that I could have taken Chinese lessons from my mom, even though she's a Chinese professor. And I know a lot of like music teachers are very like, I can't, like, typically you don't teach your daughter or you don't teach your child or something like that. I'm really curious what that experience is like when you first started learning the viola.
Yeah, so I don't know when I first picked up a violin. It probably was even younger, around 4. But I feel like, you know, in terms of me practicing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and sitting down with the violin for longer periods of time, it was around when I was 7. And yeah, my mom taught me for most of my life, in addition to a few other teachers that I had and studied with for a while, learning violin in group settings and getting some private piano studies in as well. But for the day-to-day, it was just always me and my mom. And so as I continued to progress and got into middle school, played in, you know, the string orchestra in middle school, that was around the same time that she also started to re-pursue music as her own career. She had been a school administrator. And before that, worked a variety of jobs after moving to the States. And it was always her dream to be able to freelance in music. And so I started to roll into playing violin more in middle school, and then made my way to audition for Performing Arts High School. And all through that time, if I had any questions about anything, she would just kind of be there to advise me. But it was a lot of, you know, we're in the car on the way to speech therapy, and she's talking about bow hold and vibrato and what that should feel like and kind of the energy that I should use through the bow to make sure I get a good sound. And we had very few lessons where we would kind of stand side by side in the way that I do with my students now. And it was always kind of in the midst of life, of day-to-day life, were our lessons. And of course, after a while, I did get to experience some other teachers' summer camp at Manhattan School of Music that was gratefully free at the time. And that was my first experience with kind of like a serious teacher outside of my own mom. And that was really transformative. Mm-hmm. Studied with a great violinist a bit throughout high school, but again, it was always like her and me to an extent. And in high school is when I really started to pursue the viola, because my mom said, and one of her dear friends said, you know, the world always is looking out for more violists, and you'll get more jobs if you play the viola. So, and her friend was...
As opposed to the violin,
yes, because it just seems to be a little bit harder to find violists. And even I, as a violist, and I've lived in New York City my whole life, I feel like I don't know that many violists in the city, which makes it difficult. But yeah, I started playing the viola primarily to help my mom's dear friend fill in on some community chamber groups that she was playing with. So she would play with a lot of like older retired folk, and they would meet together on weekdays and weekends and read some, you know, quartets, and then eat lunch together. And it was always just a really lovely time, and met some lovely people that way. And then before I knew it, I was off in college playing viola, making my transition more full-time to that instrument, really finding a voice that I felt was more comfortable and in line with me than I did with the violin. Just being a slightly deeper And also just like a larger resonant body too. I always think I felt a little cramped on the violin. I'm like a little bit taller or above average, sort of. I don't know. I think the instrument itself was one thing, but I also think that the types of studying that I did of music was less study intensive than one might think with having a musician parent growing up in that kind of a household.
That's interesting because it sounds more like you grew up just around music and musicians. And so it was almost like you were trained through, I can't think of another word, but like trained through community. That was your practice because your community had spaces that needed a violist or a violinist of some kind. Versus, I suppose, my kind of upbringing was like, you created that structure so that you made room for it and you practiced a certain amount of hours, and it was more similar to going to school than filling in on, someone's chamber music group as an extracurricular or something like that. Even though piano was extracurricular for me. But growing up, did you ever want to explore other paths, given that this one was sort of laid out for you and that your mom had this experience, could talk to you about it? You were sort of offered this space to practice and explore a little bit. But did you ever think, like, well, maybe I didn't want to necessarily follow in her footsteps?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean from when I was young, I remember I wanted to be a chef for the longest time. I would watch Food Network obsessively. And I love cooking to this day. You know, it's like one
Who
of
was your favorite? Do you have a favorite chef?
Do I have a fit? No, not currently. Wait, maybe. Charles Michel. He's a Colombian French chef. He was on
Ooh,
Final
very
Table, I
nice.
believe the show is. And he's an amazing
Oh, you're
like
deep in it. You like watch
environmentalist.
all the shows.
I mean that show in particular, you would love it. It's competition, reality TV, but there's like Michelin starred chefs who are paired up and creating their like wildest dreams. It's amazing. Probably, I would say, okay, if you really had to grill me on a favorite chef, it'd be Charles Michel, but out of ideology, I've never, you know, experienced his food or something. My other favorite chef would be my uncle, who really like nourished my family for so many decades. There was a time when we were both living on the same floor of this apartment building, and we would have dinners most nights of the week, you know, like at least like 8 people at the table, and he'd come home from his shift working, also like admin at a hospital, and you know, make like 8 to 10 dishes within the course of an hour for all of us, and and everyone says the reason why I grow so tall is because of the hong xiao rou, the like braised pork that he would make for us, so yeah.
Well, I can certainly see why you took that bug for culinary arts.
So chef was a big one for a while. Then I got really obsessed with the Weather Channel, and wanted to be a meteorologist. And but in terms of, I guess, more serious, no, those were serious. But in terms of, I guess, the interest that developed as I got older, I went into college really thinking that I would not pursue music, mainly because the I had really developed a sort of complex throughout high school, that is not uncommon as I've gotten to reflect with other people who went to my high school about their experience there. It was a rigorous performing arts high school, like one of the most famous in the country, and across the street from Juilliard and LaGuardia Arts. If you're an arts kid in New York
I was
City,
like,
you
yes,
know.
everyone knows where that is. Yes, you can say it.
And yeah, I saw the path. I saw that there was one path through music and a successful career in music, and I felt that I wasn't on it. I felt that it like literally like my railroad car was on the wrong side of the tracks, and I couldn't, there was no way to cross over. And that's how I felt going into college, but you know, I've always loved reading. I've always enjoyed writing. And my AP environmental science class in high school and like junior, senior year, that was really formative for me too. And so those were all kind of my other interests going into college. And then of course I started to get to play with really lovely people, started playing a lot of chamber music in college. And that's always been a setting that has felt really special to me, is really getting to know people in a close and intimate setting and working through challenges and making decisions and having to communicate your viewpoint on things, and then just getting to know them has been one of those areas that really brings me a lot of joy. So yeah, then I kind of gradually every semester would kind of have a deep cry, contemplating, oh my gosh, why do I have all these emotions every time I like have this beautiful musical experience? I'm just in my bedroom sobbing, but I feel so like excited and something's being so stirred up in me. And I eventually just made sense. It really took me a few years to understand like what that was, which was a really deep love for music and a drive that still, that there was always a worry behind it somehow, like that the drive behind it still didn't feel in line with what I was perceiving to be the way forward, I guess. And I think especially when you're in a college setting, it can feel like everything that you do here has to be connected to your way forward, right? We're all racking our brains like, how can I make the most of this incredibly expensive experience so that I am exploring to the fullest and gaining as much experience as I can to bring me to that next step or level or stage. And I wish that I had had more time to just enjoy the experience while I was there a little more. We had, remarkably at my college, a fiddler on faculty, and his wife, who was a clog.
At Skidmore?
Yeah, at Skidmore, yeah. And his wife, who was a clog dancer, I don't know the technical term for it, but amazing Americana music and tradition, and multiple violinists who were that I got to be in school with at the same time. And I really wish I had gotten more into fiddling and bluegrass and Americana music at my time there, but instead I would just watch and just absorb and be in awe of the musicianship. But I eventually kind of started to find my way there. So I caught the bug, and I guess it needed a little bit of time to germinate.
Yeah. Well, you're someone who talks about the importance of, or simply that you have a passion in making interdisciplinary art and having your work be interdisciplinary in nature, which is why your breath and bow meditations involve not just the viola, but a little bit of electronic music, voice, and just all the things that you normally have to navigate while doing a solo live performance. And it was so incredible for me to observe, as someone who's into what I would call sound healing and also using artistry and creative expression as a way of, healing yourself. So I'm really curious, you know, in all of the struggles and the crises that you experience about your path forward and what it should look like and the expectations that you had around you, how did you create a healing experience through your musicianship?
I think the first few times that I came across this challenge of there's a blockage and I need to move through it, but I also need to keep playing. They had to do with physical experiences, so injuries. I went abroad to study in China for a semester, and I wasn't playing much there. And I came back to Skidmore full on, three chamber groups, orchestra, the whole thing, and started needing to go to physical therapy for the first time, which was an amazing experience, because from then on, I kind of knew what I had to do to take care of my body in order to sustain my playing. And I wish that, well, this is something I try and teach with my students too, is how to take care of their bodies as they're going through practicing and watch out and take breaks. And it's something that can't be stressed enough, is musicians, we use our bodies every single day in a very specific way. And they're just a certain group of muscles. And if we just keep using them and don't use them in other ways other than holding up our instruments or sitting at the piano, they're going to atrophy and they're going to get too much stress on them. So college, and then when I went for my master's at Eastman, had a full-on mental breakdown before my first year jury, end of the year jury, and would walk into a practice room and I would feel the entire left side of my neck tense up. I'd walk into this practice room with no instrument. I was just gonna sit down at the piano and do my theory homework, but it had gotten to the point where I was spending so much time practicing and practicing in such a way that the mental toll of what I felt I needed to accomplish in my hours practicing was completely making it impossible for me to actually make any progress and improvement in a way that was meaningful. And so physical care became really important, but also mental care and the mental awareness that I actually had it within my power to make practicing fun for myself and to make it lighter and make it feel not like something that was an obligation, but actually something that was kind of like a privilege, really. And if you go to a music conservatory, you are already in a huge state of privilege. There are a lot of people who have to work very hard to make that possible, but it is not an environment that you can just really waltz right into, right? There are so many barriers of entry to even getting to that audition. And there's so much mental stress that goes along with it too. I was reflecting about a friend from college, and we were like remarking on how amazing of a musician he is and how he could have gone so far with his career. But ultimately, if you're already playing at such a high level by the time you're 18, you've spent 15 years before that. So some saying like, you know, even in your case, I think, saying that piano was an extracurricular, to what extent was it really a career that you were pursuing as a child, right? We kind of, we don't realize it, but those hours each week that we practice, even if you're practicing minutes a day as a small child, that's, you know, you can get to 10,000 hours very easily over 15 years. And it's makes a lot of sense why young musicians burn out at the same time, you know?
Yeah, because especially you're seeing kids around your age, you're like, this is what I do for fun. I practice 3 hours a day. Meanwhile, their hobbies are like, I collect stamps. You know, it does not take that much rigor to have that hobby, you know, for example. And it's so funny being raised culturally in an environment where like your hobbies are very much just things you have to practice a lot at. You know, they're like learning trades or learning skills and crafts and things like that. Which is why I think like every Chinese family I knew, their kid had to play the piano at some point, because there's just that idea that your kid has got to be doing all this stuff in order to be well-rounded and set up for future success. But it's so interesting that you're talking about all of these things when we talk about having to create our own healing journeys later, because, you know, I can tell you some of the biggest issues I've seen affect other musicians is exactly like you say, anxiety, aka stage performance, an oldie but goodie, and then other forms of health related things like physical health, like you said, injury. So they're all around taking care of ourselves, our health, and our well-being. It's no wonder that we later have to play catch up with figuring out why things became more and more difficult, because we're not necessarily shown the challenges and the suffering and the pain at a young age of some of the things we're pursuing, you know?
And we're not made aware that
old memories, but.
Oh no, and we're not made aware that there's another path besides suffering. We feel like, I think there's such a cultural thing I don't know, in all of human society somehow, I've been toying with ideas of like, what are Western like societal expectations that I feel like I've really are deeply ingrained in, what are the Eastern societal things that I feel like I also have going through me, but it really feels like somehow a human thing that we feel like we have to suffer in order to accomplish greatness. And also that we're like striving for greatness at all is also its own separate thing. Rather than doing your best at something because it lights you up. And that is the direction that I've been working really hard to go into. And even as I just said the part before, like, yeah, I actually am working really hard to create this practice that feels effortless. It's not been an easy road to get to feeling open, so even in this too, it seems like counterintuitive, but it's because we have so many years of this pent-up expectation that is not of our own willing, than to find out, well, what is my will? What is your will in living and in how you want to contribute to this world here?
Well, and that makes me, it's so big, but I really want to admire you for asking these big questions. And also, artists just tend to do that. We ask the big existential questions that we know don't necessarily have a straight answer, but here we are anyway. And that's kind of how I felt when I, had the honor of attending and just being a part of your Breath and Bow meditations. I'm just curious about your creative process behind the scenes. And some of the themes that you put into the original composition that you put out there. And yeah, just a little bit of like your own creative process, because that may be a little bit outside of the box for even a lot of musicians to watch, to create something without all these structures and standards and expectations, and here's what it looks like. It seemed to me like this was just, you did what you wanted to do or what you tried to do to the best of your effort. So I'm really curious to hear you talk about what that show means for you.
Yeah. So I think that part of the creation process of those compositions was everything that I've done in my life up until that point of performance. And I say that in that I've been reflecting deeply on progress and changes that I've made over the course of the past decade and 2 decades, and what those practices have been and how they are kind of settled into my body now. One of the big things for me is yoga. I realized that I'm probably just over a decade into having a more regular yoga practice. I was lucky enough to, one of my PE semesters or years in high school was yoga rather than like volleyball.
Yoga in high school?
Yeah.
Dang,
I know, really. I have so much to be grateful for. And our like teacher was pregnant for, I feel like, the entire year, which is maybe possible, yeah. And so one of our it, what was great was that we had another student often who was like practicing yoga lead a lot of the times, or show the demonstrate the poses. And so there was always this level of like, oh, it's not just the teacher who's doing this. Like, one of my peers is actually doing this. And just, I don't know, lit that bulb up. And so yoga has been huge. And tied with yoga, of course, is meditation. And both of those practices have been, honestly, something that I land on more so in times of crisis than taking it proactively. And so being proactive with those practices that I know do so much for me has been in itself a journey. And I wish to share that because so many people get intimidated by even approaching meditation and yoga because they hear immediately, jump into it. You will try it for 30 days and it'll be great and it'll change your life. And if you don't make it to 30 days, I can't tell you how many 30-day challenges I've started and then paused and then picked up again and resumed and then forgotten about for a month and then done, sat for, you know, an hour just because I felt like it, and then it was a full moon out or something and my body was telling me to slow down or whatever. All of those experiences add up. So even if you feel like the dots on the map are not consistent, right? If you just keep going over the course of 10 years, you actually have built something that's pretty consistent. I don't know if I'm just building myself up about this because this is what's been going on in my mind recently, but I feel it basically.
It's cool that you built it up though, to like, to even include it in, I don't know. It sounds like you're saying like you connect meditation and yoga and all and moving your body and mindfulness with your musical process. Like that's what I'm hearing. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, it became really necessary for me after a while, especially I think at that time when I was in my master's degree. And I realized that if I let my mind continue to spiral in the ways that it was spiraling, if I wasn't aware of how it was spiraling and what was causing it at the time of my master's, I had no idea what was causing it. Now I have a little bit more of an understanding of what I felt so challenged by. Mm-hmm. And they were things that were external to me that I had internalized. And now I just try to let myself run the show. It sounds, even coming out of my mouth right now, I'm like, well, of course, like you do whatever you choose to do in a day, right? But no, it's really difficult to have the privilege, the space, the resources to get to do what feels comfortable and also driving and also generative, because we are so concerned with generating a lot of the time, whether it's us or not, yeah. Right?
Well, you know, I'm really curious about your creative process leading up to that show that involves a little bit of yoga, mindfulness, but you talk about how difficult it is to actually hold that space of actually surrendering to freedom and getting into that space. So I'm curious what helped you get there, you know, for your performances where you had to let go and just let things happen and let go of control in some ways, but you were also performing. You were delivering on your compositions and the things you wanted to show for people in front of friends and family. And so it's so funny you talk about how there has to be an aspect of fun and all of that. But in another sense, I can see why people think about that experience and be like, oh my gosh, going through that would be so stressful or something like that, right? So I'm just curious what helped you through that creative process for you for that show.
So one of the biggest things with this show, and the reason why I wanted to talk a bit about things over time, is that the actual show mm-hmm. came together very rapidly, and I didn't really realize it until I went back and kind of looked through my journals, looked through the dates that songs had been coming together. And I had written basically all of the material for the show in kind of a 1 week span of time. There's one song that I had written a few months prior, a few days after I had my first seizure, and mm-hmm. everything else happened very quickly. I think one of the only reasons why I was able to make that happen was, one, I carved out the time and space for myself to do that. I had recently quit a job that was taking up a lot of time mentally, and I was under the time constraint of when the performance was. I knew that certain things had to develop in a certain time, but ultimately I knew that from experience, because I of course have dealt with procrastination my entire life. I don't know anyone who's gone through an undergrad and a master's degree who hasn't had to have their own fight with procrastination in some way, but I knew that if I didn't surrender to the process of what needed to come out, then it would only make it more difficult. So some things came very easily. One of the first pieces the first piece I performed on that program came out very easily and was a full settling of, so the piece, it started with just the bottom three strings of the viola, repeat that, and just change one note on the bottom and loop. From there, I added the last open string with my voice. And I found that these gestures that are just so intrinsic to the instrument have been such a wonderful thing to explore for me, because I think that we, as musicians, and especially as classically trained musicians, get very concerned about adding to and generating more notes more fast.
Oh, you mean embellishing? Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And kind of, yeah. And I think it's amazing what people can add to, right? But I think at the time,
sure,
that initial writing or creation of that piece was, I needed to feel settled in that time and space of where I was, and I let myself get settled in kind of the most basic way that my instrument and my voice could, and I didn't question it either. And this, now that I'm a few months away from that performance and thinking about future things, is one of those challenges of, wow, will I be able to surrender in that same way? And I'm gonna just tell myself yes, so that it can be true. But what I loved about that week of creating was I had moments like that, which were very effortless, I would say, where I really was able to sink into it. And then I had 2.5 days where I just kept throwing my head at the wall, thinking that I needed to write this piece that was going to have lots of fast notes and be very dynamic and be very exciting, and also be on the violin, which there were some things that I needed to work out with my own personal relationship with the violin as an instrument, whereas the viola continued to feel a little bit more like home. And after those like almost 3 days of really pushing this thing that wasn't happening yet, you know, it wasn't clear the purpose of it was, or the intentions of where it was coming from were not the actual joyous kind of, they weren't actually coming from the joy that I wanted the piece to evoke. It wasn't happening. And I got really dark about it. I was like, oh my goodness, now we are 4 days until the deadline that I put in my own mind for myself to have these things written by. And I don't know what I'm gonna do. And I feel like shit. And I've never composed music for the ever before, really. That's a lie. At that point I had. But I've never composed music for myself, for with no other expectations, presenting what feels like an image of myself, of what keeps me grounded. So in that moment, I had to find that grounding for myself. I was spiraling into the darkness, as has happened many times in my life before. And I knew from experience, from my meditation practice, from therapy, that if I tried to resist that feeling of darkness, it would just keep being there, but it would be unresolved. And so I let myself go into it. And that is when I started to write one of the other pieces, which was How Many More? And that refrain repeats itself, and was also a really effective way for me to grieve probably about 7 years of life at that point, of losing loved ones, of the pandemic, feeling like I had lost any semblance of my vocation, of countless lives to police violence and illness and World War III on the brink, and just all of these things that felt like they kept barreling at us at a macro level and on a micro level. And still at that moment, like, oh my God, I need to get this out right now. But can I actually perform this for people? Like, can I expect to put people in this position of having them ask themselves how many more? Of having them wonder how many more times is something horrific that we feel like completely out of our power to do anything about? How many more times is that going to happen? But I did it anyways, because it was ultimately helpful for me to process it, because I think that it's so difficult to voice helplessness, I think.
Yeah, wow. I'm taking all of this in because obviously I just got to enjoy the performance when I first experienced it, right? But it sounds to me like that performance for you was a way to acknowledge what you've been through, including your health and including how you were impacted by the things that were impacting everyone at that time. But to me, as someone who just got to enjoy it, it seemed like it was very generous because you just, in allowing yourself to have the space to grieve and feel whatever you try to feel, rather than try to make it a problem, you also gave other people space to just be themselves and feel whatever came up for them. And there's something about that, coming from an artist, is very, very healing. I remember some of the people sitting in the audience were just looking for a sanctuary space, which is where it was at, looking for a space to just be allowed to be however they are in that moment. And it was quite eye-opening and heart-opening to see someone go through the struggle and still be willing to halt the space in that way. Because like you say, it's not easy. So thank you for going through the healing process, which a lot of times is just about acknowledging what happened, which is so hard, even though it seems simple when you say it out loud, but it's just to acknowledge what has happened so you can move forward. And there's something about music that can help bridge the gap for that. Even it sounds like for you in composing something after going through a seizure. I don't talk about this very often, but one thing that kept happening as I was improvising music was like childhood memories coming back up. And that was sort of like my like dark night of the soul. Even though on the outside, it sounded like the most twinkly classical music ever. But, you know, if people ask me about the origins behind it, they might be quite surprised. But in any case, just it was an amazing space that you held there, both for yourself and for others. And thank you for taking on the challenge.
Thank you for that reflection and sharing. It means a lot. Yeah, I feel really humbled to have received the feedback that I did from audience members, from my friends, and from people who showed up in the community, that they did feel like it was a space where they were held. And I think that's ultimately what I wanted to evoke with Breath and Bow Meditations, is take the practice of something that really felt like it was an open vessel for me and bring it to more people, kind of take something that is very private and personal, right? My own experience with healing and what it's taken and what it kind of looks like in many ways, and actually make it visible to other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were just modeling, which is honestly the best form of education, but it's harder to do, I think, with integrity. So not just like talk about the thing, but to model what it is you're trying to teach others. And I'm curious now, if I can ask another question. You talked about next year and what that journey looks like for you. So is there anything that you want to preview or tease? Because you mentioned something earlier.
Yes. So I've gotten some very great news in the past week, which is that a dear friend of mine, Desmond Kinsu, who is a conductor based in Phoenix and Flagstaff. I had performed with his orchestra earlier this year, the Telemann Viola Concerto, which was my first orchestral concerto performance, and that was really a great time.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So yeah, I've received a commission from Flagstaff Arts Council, I believe the name of the organization is, to compose a piece for that will be a concerto for string orchestra and percussion to be performed and premiered in December of 2023. I'm very excited about it. I plan on also applying for some grants of my own for that and seeing if I can kind of let the piece exist in stages of development. Oh, I'm totally thinking about, like, I was obsessed with butterflies in elementary school. I wrote a whole report on, like, and like a poetry cycle on the metamorphoses of a butterfly and like the cocoon stage. That's kind of what I'm imagining right now, for giving this piece like 6 month life cycles, in different ensemble sizes as well, is what I hope that the grant will be able to support anyways.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so that I'm really looking forward to.
Will you be performing it? Is that the expectation?
I will be performing the concerto as well, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Oof, I love composition, but there comes a point where, like, realistic, I was like, dang, it's like some of these things I could compose, but I don't know if I can play them. So that is something as a pianist I'm also thinking about. But regardless of that, congratulations in having this privilege and honor, and I can't wait to hear what you cook up with this concerto.
Thank you. I will, you know, if all works out, I'll definitely be performing a version of it in New York City as well. So, nice. But the premiere of the full piece will happen in Flagstaff, Arizona. So super excited about that.
Amazing.
And then as of this past weekend as well, I have been appointed to be the executive director of the Greenwich Village Orchestra, which is a community orchestra that I've played with for many years now. The orchestra has been around for a long time and has served the New York City community for a long time, and really was a place that challenged my perception of what my goals are in music, what the purpose of music is supposed to do, and really, I think, was pivotal in helping me shatter this notion of that straight line path in music, and seeing that week to week, musicians and people will gather just to create music with each other and put their time and energy just out of joy of creating together, and not because they feel like they need to sell a product necessarily, or they need to perform, I don't know, in Carnegie Hall to prove a point or something, you know, like we're performing in community spaces with community members, and we sound great, I have to say. I've always loved playing with GVO, and it's so fun, and just has always been wildly different from my other experiences. Freelancing in New York City can be a very mixed bag, but whenever I'm there in the orchestra, I've always felt really settled and at home, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity to help them continue doing that. So that's going to be a new adventure.
Well, it sounds like you're kind of living the best of both worlds, both having the community aspect of what makes music and music making amazing, and you're going to be spotlighted and having your work featured in a different way at in Arizona. So congratulations to all of those things, and I can't wait to see what 2023 looks like for the both of us. And thank you for offering your time and your insights today for other creative minds, for other musicians, for people who've gone through the struggle of what is my voice and how do I do this, and to see that you get through it by not doing it alone. That's for one. So thank you for connecting with me today.
And not doing it alone is very important, but I also think not asking too many questions and trusting yourself is probably the most important. Yeah, and again, easier said than done, but I think for every person that feels a spark or a light about something, you already have the way forward. If you've already felt that light about it, you have access to
exactly what it takes to make it happen, because that energy is already within you. Everything else is going to figure itself out. So,
yes, but that, so that don't energy, give up. Keep going.
Yeah, but the energy, you can't buy that. You can buy all the equipment in the world, but the spark is special. So, as I continue to buy myself more equipment,
let's keep the sparkle. So. That is, I've set some embargoes on myself. Like, no more buying extra microphones that you're not going to use. You only use the one that's plugged in right now. Deal with it. That's me right now. But anyway, thank you so much for today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in. And if you'd like to connect with me, please reach out at www.robertkwangcoaching.com. And also feel free to reach out to me on Instagram at Robert Kwong Coaching.